Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, my name is Connie Going, and welcome to Adoption Focus. Adoption Focus is a radio blog show that is sponsored by Adoption Associates. They are an adoption agency out of Michigan. They have offices in Jenison, Farmington Hills, Lansing, and Saginaw. They specialize in domestic and international adoption. And since 1990, they have done well over 5,000 adoptions. I am so excited today to have with us Julie Kimball Kubiak. And I'm putting her on the line right now. Are you there, Julie?
I am, Connie.
Yay, I am so excited. I have to tell everyone that we are actually in a new studio today. And so I'm extra excited about that. And being able to talk to you because I'm in Florida and Julie is in Michigan. You're in which part of Michigan? Livonia?
I'm in Livonia, Metro Livonia. Detroit. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. We are very excited to discuss, Julie is just an expert in so many areas, but how attachment plays a role in adoption. And I also want to open this up at a certain time for some call-in, and I will give that number in just a little bit as we're talking. So we may take some calls, and that'll be a first for us, but I just thought that this topic is just too exciting, and we really want to put the word out there. So, Julie, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely, Connie. I am a clinical social worker, and I have had a private practice in Livonia, Michigan, for almost 20 years now, and the specialty in my practice is almost completely adoption-focused, trauma, attachment, and adoption. I work with adoptive families and their children, the whole gamut, from children adopted at a very young age to those adopted through the foster care system or internationally, and even some work with adult adoptees.
So what absolutely, and that is so needed because in the world of adoption, it is challenging to find a therapist, social worker that understands the intricacies and the challenges that come along with adoption. And what kind of brought you into that space to where this was going to be a passion for you?
Well, isn't that an interesting question, Connie? My passion for this work is it comes from a very personal level because I was adopted. I was adopted at 2 months old, a very young age, many years ago. And I always share that with the kids that I work with. And I often say my story is different than your story, but there are core pieces for all of us that are adopted that are the same. And so I understand the adoption journey on a personal perspective, and the kids and the teens that I have worked with over the years have taught me a tremendous amount about understanding it on a professional level.
Yes, it's amazing how I think that once adoption touches you, and whether you've been adopted or you're an adopted parent or you're a social worker, caseworker in the field, birth mother, I mean, once it touches your life, it changes your life forever. And some of us are, I call it blessed, able to work in the field that we are so passionate about. And I think it brings with it personal growth as a professional and just awe for the entire process and the children and the family.
Yes, I totally agree. Passion is the first word that I always use when I talk about my job.
isn't that an amazing thing? I feel that
really.
there are probably people that are envious out there, but I think that you're given gifts for reasons, and being able to work with families and children is a definite gift. Tell us a little bit about how attachment, just wherever you want to start, in whatever realm you want to start, plays a role in adoption.
Absolutely. You know, attachment is the most important developmental task of early childhood. It sets the foundation for this little human being, this child, and how they see the world and how they see relationships with adults, how they view themselves, and when children are given the gift of healthy parents and develop a secure attachment, that's setting a strong foundation on the beginning of their lives. And so on the flip side, when children are raised early on in chaos, abuse, trauma, neglect, and attachment isn't developing in their relationships because it's not available to them, it sets the foundation for what the world is going to look like: scary, confusing, chaotic, not trusting, having to depend on themselves and not adults. And that changes their dynamics going forward. And so as children move into adoptive relationships, adoptive families, that foundation, whether they receive the healthy attachment or often not, plays a huge role in how they're going to be able to let a new family into their heart or hold themselves at bay.
I agree. And, you know, I think it travels into adulthood. And I look at my own children, and I just want them to be able to have healthy relationships with other human beings in their life. And I feel that my job as an adoptive parent is to go back and kind of re-nurture and a lot of those broken cycles. And it doesn't matter if they're 17 or 15 or, you know, 6 or 7, or even from birth, that it's my job as an adoptive parent to go ahead and build those cycles healthily so that they have that foundation of having their needs met on a consistent
basis.
What are some of the, and we're going to cover all different types of adoption, but let's talk a little bit, let's start with international adoption, because Adoption Associates, they do international adoptions, and so many over the years. What are some of the things that a parent looking into international adoption might want to be open to as they move through their adoption journey?
Well, I would start with, you know, education, and open to the idea that parenting through the adoption experience is different than parenting through the experience of giving birth. It just is. And I think that, you know, everybody goes into adoption for different reasons, and sometimes parents tell me, you know, I heard this word many, many times, I went into this with rose-colored glasses.
I call it the white picket fence syndrome.
Well, yeah, there you go. Same thing. And so the most important thing that parents can take into preparing for the adoption experience is educating themselves on attachment, early child development, on the impact of trauma on children's brains, on the impact of trauma on relationships, and I think most importantly, the concept of therapeutic parenting and what that's going to mean from the moment their child comes into their life going forward.
I agree. And I think that with international adoption, I mean, there are younger children, but you're looking at children that have experienced significant challenges in their early life. And
right, and in so many circumstances, children who have been in orphanages for the majority of their life, and so we know that affects a child's ability to attach. And when they've had their basic needs taken care of but not had an opportunity to attach with someone, a challenge will inevitably be presented in the adoption experience. Are they able to overcome it? Absolutely. But it takes knowledge and education on the parent's part to understand what that's going to look like and what their role is in helping their child overcome that trauma.
Absolutely, and in talking to families, I think that one of the proponents and why I'm so excited to work with Adoption Associates is that education for adoptive families is the key. Historically, I mean, if you go back many, many years, there wasn't a lot of education. We didn't talk about trauma. We didn't talk about attachment. We just put families together. This would go back, 30 years or more.
Right, absolutely.
And we just put them together and said, oh, happy life. There's your white picket fence.
Yeah.
And adoptive families come into adoption for many reasons, but one of them could be infertility issues, and you know, we all know that loss plays a role in adoption in every format. And so what are some things that a family, besides reaching out to a qualified therapist, and I want to say that is that, you know, I feel that the age of therapists are coming to where they're becoming more adoption competent, that they're giving the right messages. I think they're understanding attachment more. But to look for someone who specializes in that.
Right.
But what are some things that a family, say for a young child that is internationally adopted, a toddler, and what are some things, that just some basic things that they could do if they were working with a therapist?
Well, I think for in adopting a young child, especially internationally, I think parents really need to begin with the mentality that my job is to create the opportunity for the child to be dependent on me and not push toward independence, right? If you adopt a 2 or a 3-year-old, in typical development, they're beginning to work toward independence, but in creating that attachment with the adoptive parent, they need to be dependent, and so maybe that means sleeping together. Maybe that means some bottle feeding or spoon feeding when maybe they could do some of their own finger feeding, more holding time, more cuddling time, more touch, bath time or bath time together. That's maybe going a little bit backwards developmentally, but that's okay because it's tackling that most important task of attachment.
Yes, I find it very developmentally, one of the things that adoptive parents aren't prepared for is that, and this is the whole gamut, children are often younger than their chronological age. And so
absolutely,
you may be adopting a 3 or 4-year-old, but maybe they're more on emotionally and developmentally like a 1-year-old. And the challenge going home with a young child is your friends are, their 4-year-old is doing this and this and this, and your 4-year-old is doing this. And I fast forward that to older children because you may adopt a teen or even an 8 or a 9-year-old, we'll go a little younger, and you're going to find that they are 3 to 4 years behind in what they need emotionally.
Absolutely.
And
it's perfectly okay to have to go back and parent them at that younger age. And sometimes that's really helpful for parents to recognize my child's emotional age is typically at 5, even though he's 10. And so to wrap their mind around what 5-year-olds need, what 5-year-old expectations are, and to get out of that very easy temptation of comparing your child to the typical 10-year-old.
Right. Because without that attachment, the healthy relationships are hard to form, and I don't think that people really, the world, and I want the world to understand, which is why I love to talk about this, is that they understand that, and as you know, like I have teenagers, and they were adopted as teens, and they may be 17, but they are really 11 years old.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the behaviors that come with that, like, for my boys, maybe shooting Nerf guns at each other and, I mean, reliving. In fact, my one son one time went to the grocery store, and it was so funny. He had a plastic ball, and he was 14 at the time. And he started to put everything in the cart, and I looked at him like he was crazy. And I said, now put that back. And then he'd take his ball, and he'd bounce it on my head. And he looked at me, he says, so he goes, I'm just reliving the part of the childhood that I missed. I wasn't with you for this. I think my mantra has become, as an adoptive parent, has become, this is not a reflection of my parenting.
Yes.
And so that not to own that, that those behaviors. And I think that universally, whether they're teens or tweens or elementary school or it, you know, toddlers, to understand what that is about is universal.
Yes, yes.
What are some
very often?
Mm-hmm.
I was just going to add, you brought up the point of that your child's emotional age. Very often, children are stuck at the emotional age of their trauma. Now, some
very
kids
true.
Have had pervasive trauma, but in some circumstances, it's maybe when the first move happened or move away from their birth parents. And sometimes they get stuck around that age of their trauma. And so it's perfectly okay to go back and parent at that younger age because it builds a sense of trust and security with the parent, with the adoptive parent.
And it really, really does. And I always tell, because if you're thinking that your child should be behaving like a five-year-old, like you know, you went into adoption saying, I'm adopting internationally, but I'm looking like four and five, and maybe you weren't prepared for that younger stage. As a parent, you really have to gear yourself up to go back and enjoy. Now, for some parents, they may love that younger age and really enjoy the things that you do to build that attachment and nurture. I think it's a journey you don't know until you're on.
Yep.
But I definitely agree the worst thing is denial, which is why I just, again, love to talk about this. Because a lot of times adoption, again, we talk about loss, but, you know, a parent could be feeling sad, could be feeling like they're not a good parent when they're just not at the doing things at the right chronological age for their child.
Yes. I think that you can attest to the fact that in the journey of adoption parenting and parenting kids with trauma histories, it is incredibly important as a parent to grow in your self-awareness and the ability to let go of my child's behavior as a reflection of me.
Yes.
And appreciate that my child's behavior is a reflection of what he or she has gone through in their life. And I'm here to help them learn differently.
I so agree with that. I also believe, and I think this is a topic for another day, but I so believe that we don't always, especially in domestic infant adoption, always acknowledge genetics.
Yes.
And the journey in utero. I think that we don't, but the genetics piece is, I think, something in the world of adoption, especially domestic adoption, we don't always acknowledge and talk about. And I think it's a piece of who you are. And you don't recreate that child into who you are.
Right.
And I see a lot of parents with that challenge because they may not have processed their loss issues.
Yes. And I think that sometimes adoptive parents who particularly get very young children, infants, go into the journey that, you know, I've educated myself. I know how to do this right. So I can predict the outcome. He or she is going to be emotionally healthy. And when my experience professionally has been that parents who have adopted infants and their kids have mental health challenges, especially early on, feel a lot of struggle and frustration and guilt about that, and I think you're absolutely right. We tend to ignore the piece that this child comes into the world with a genetic makeup that we don't have control over. And sometimes that genetic makeup includes mental health issues.
And you know, even it's kind of ironic. I mean, I think that parents in our generation tend to live a little bit in denial, in the sense, even with their own genetic issues. So I think sometimes even looking at their children, admitting that there is a mental health issue connects with guilt.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they're your biological child, you really have to look at your own family and your own family tree and the genetics there. And in adoption, If you haven't really acknowledged the birth parent as a place in the whole adoption, then I think it's very difficult. And one of the things that I really admire in this day and age of adoption, and also with adoption associates, are the openness that I see in adoptions with birth families and adoptive families. Because having a relationship that's open between a birth parent and an adoptive family allows them to have those questions, to know those answers, you know, if there is a mental health challenge.
Yes.
You know, instead of the big unknown, they have all the pieces, and they can kind of say, well, you know, the mom may have had some depression or some anxiety issues in her late teens or early 20s, or even after giving birth. And not knowing that as an adopted child, you know, and becoming an adult, you know, to know what you are genetically connected to, it's not as scary as people think.
I agree. I think that the concept of open adoption can be scary and intimidating to adoptive parents, but there's so many gifts, and I think you just pointed out a huge piece in terms of health and physical and mental health issues that are a greater benefit to the child to have that openness.
Mm-hmm, it is, and to know where you come from and who you look like. So whether it's semi open or, but just to not to acknowledge it and to bring it forth, and I think we're all on kind of this mission in the world of adoption to make sure that we've moved past the time where, you know, it was just it was totally different. It was done totally different than it is now. Talk a little bit about. If I'm a domestic, I'm adopting domestically, and I'm adopting a very young, an infant, what are some of the basics that I can do just to nurture? So I don't know that my child has trauma. Mom may have had a lot of moves and things like that, not a stable life, but my child is born, she's born healthy, I take her home, and what are some skill sets that I can do, simple things?
As an adoptive parent, adopting an infant is what you're asking.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think one, as a parent, you know, finding a place of acceptance and truth within yourself that I'm okay that my child has two sets of parents. In my heart and soul, I'm okay with that.
Yes.
Because that sets the foundation for how you will communicate moving forward to your child about their story.
Mm-hmm.
If you, as the parent, as the mom, if you're okay, if you're truly okay with that, you're going to send that message to your child, which opens the door for, I'm okay with whatever you want to ask me or talk about down the road.
Right.
And then on a practical, you know, everyday level, it's the nurturing activities that go along with infancy, the touch, the holding, the comfort, the acknowledging with yourself and watching within your child that there could be grief. I mean, babies can grieve. A baby could be with a birth mom for a couple of months and be placed and be grieving, and they don't have any other way of telling us that they're grieving other than crying. But if we know that attachments begin in utero, that loss begins from the moment a child is born, if they're placed in an adoptive home, that the child's experiencing loss. And so it's not so easy to recognize unless you've really put that on the forefront of your mind and educated yourself that young children, that infants can grieve, and you have to be attentive to what your child is in your infant's communicating to you.
I agree, and totally about the signal, because, you know, the message that you're giving your child, I think that we're at an age of parenting all children where we're using certain tools, certain slings to keep them closer. I wrote an article on breastfeeding your adopted child, And I, as an adoptive mom, had no idea that people did that. And I just found that completely fascinating. And there was another story about an actual birth mother who actually pumped her milk, and the adoptive mother utilized her milk. It was really cool.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. Yeah.
Isn't that just incredible? And yeah. I thought, it's all about the child. It's all about what is best for that child. And but the activities that bring you closer, and I mean, we all can imagine that a baby crying. I think in parenthood, we think we're prepared for that baby crying. But and then you're like, what have I done? Oh, I love this baby, but oh my gosh. And you're rocking that baby. And to understand that in adoption, on top of maybe having colic or maybe having an upset stomach, is that they are grieving. And I don't think that people really talk about that enough. And to be able to come up with a plan before you bring your child home of how you're going to wrap that child in nurture and allow them to grieve, but to keep them close to you to attach.
Right, right. All those fancy devices where we wear our babies, I think those are awesome. Yeah.
Well, you know what? If I could have done that with my 15-year-old, it would have helped a lot.
Yeah.
because he needed to go back to that time. And, you know, it's, I think being creative in how you, and that's what I want parents to think about that are listening to this, is how are you going to reach out, educate yourself, accept that there is grief, you know, grief and loss in your child, and that how are you going to nurture that?
Yes. Yeah.
And I just think that the more information I find our adoptive parents, they, you know, it's such a process where you don't have a lot of control, but the one thing you can control while you're in the process is the fact you can educate yourself. And even though it may not be exactly like you think it's going to be, you can prepare yourself and come up with a plan, but acknowledgement is just key.
Yeah, I love the information, and I do some groups around this on the 7 core issues of adoption, and that's probably a discussion for another time. But I do some teen girl groups on the 7 core issues of adoption, and we look at it from the perspective of everybody in the triad, you know. If we're talking about loss, or if we're talking about grief, what loss experiences do adoptees have? What loss experiences do birth parents have? What loss experiences do adoptive parents have? And just recognizing that all parts of the triad are touched with all 7 core issues of adoption.
It's so true. And I definitely think that it's a continued conversation, because people have no idea. Can you just kind of say what they are, because we've mentioned them, and I want to put it out there, because the people will be going back and they'll be
Googling. I knew you were going to say that, and I'm sitting at my home office, and I just started jotting them down because I have them on the wall in my office. I talk about them all the time, but I'm thinking, can I come up with all 7?
That's
loss.
Right.
We just talked about loss, grief, shame and guilt, intimacy, control. Trying to picture the list in my office. They'll come to me.
Okay, we have one more. I'm trying to remember. Well, you know, I actually do a certification in Florida. We certify the therapist through the state, through a Rutgers program, and it is about this is part of the training. So I should know it.
Right. These are the things I talk about all the time. Right. But to list them off, that's okay. It'll come to me.
I love it. What are some other things that you would like to just kind of put out there as a whole while we have a captive audience? And, you know, this show will be taped.
Sure. I guess the piece that I'd like to add a little bit on, because I touched on it but I didn't get into too much further down the road, is the concept of therapeutic parenting. And that's a huge piece of what I do teach in the therapy that I do with families, and I do all family-based work. When kids come to see me, it's very rare, or it's very far down the journey of therapy with me that I ever see kids individually. I almost always do family-based work, both parents in the office and the child or the teen. But a big part of what I do is teach, and we have some classes in my clinic for teaching therapeutic parenting and what that means to be therapeutic in your parenting. It's hard work. It's 24/7. But it's having to be mindful at every moment that your child has a different history, that they have lived through trauma, that most behaviors, challenging behaviors that they present, come from a place of fear or stress, and that you can't just be parents on a behavioral level and respond to the behavior. You have to learn to look beneath the behavior and figure out what's driving it emotionally and address the emotion. What's the fear or what's the stress that's leading your child to lie, to steal, to go into a tantrum? What's driving that emotionally, and how you respond to that emotionally, and how you, and on top of it, how do you stay regulated as a parent?
Because that's key. Because you know, knowing it and living it every single day, and I have it times four, so it's a challenge to think that this behavior is not, they're not choosing to have that behavior per se. That it is a lot deeper than that. And what is it really, really about?
Exactly. More often, the challenging behaviors that you see in your home are your child communicating something about his or her story, something that they've been through that leads to big feelings, and you have to think therapeutically as a parent, what's this about? I'm not just going to respond to the behavior, because that doesn't change things. I need to help my child talk through what's driving this. I need to stay regulated as a parent, because the calm brain controls the relationship. And when the child's dysregulated, a dysregulated parent following along is just going to create chaos, right?
I have lived it at moments, in my not-so-great moments, and then as an adoptive parent, and then in my better moments, my non-reactionary moments, it's so much easier. And, you know, I always tell everyone that parenting is not about being perfect. It is really about laying in bed at night and trying to figure out how to do it better, because some days are going to be, you know, you're going to be like, I got it this time. And the next time you're going to be like, didn't get it that time. I got to step it up. But I love talking about the regulation of the parent, because I think that is probably the hardest thing to do as any parent.
Absolutely. And particularly adoptive parents that have kids with trauma histories, because they can present very challenging behavior. As a parent, you have to grow in your self-awareness to say, what are my hot buttons? What's that about for me? Where is that coming from that every time he does X, boy, I can just lose it? I've got to take a little look at myself and my history and look at that so that I can have better control over my regulation. Because my regulation leads to being able to co-regulate my child.
Absolutely, and I'm sure the adoptive parents that are out there are thinking of situations as we're talking, and knowing, and figuring out how they're going to do it next time. And I really want to see if we can open up the line a little bit. I haven't done this yet, so I'm going to put a number out there. We may or not have anybody calling, because I didn't promote this, but it's just such a wonderful topic. So I'm going to put out the guest call-in number, and it is 347- 850-1100. And as we're starting to wrap up, if anyone is out there and has a question for Julie or a question for me, we would love to have you call in. And it's just such a great opportunity to share your experience or talk about, you know, I have a question about attachment and adoption. because most families, when we have our support groups, it is very clear that this is probably the topic. And therapeutic parenting and how do we do it better is always really important. And learning new ways to do that.
Connie, I would just add for the listeners out there that are thinking about exploring that journey of therapeutic parenting, the model that I like the most, and there are a number of good models out there for therapeutic parenting, but the one that I like the most, I think is the most user-friendly for parents, is Heather Forbes' work, Beyond Consequences, Logic and Control. And we teach small groups of adoptive parents in our clinic the Beyond Consequences model over a 10-week period.
Yeah.
But there's so many avenues of learning it. Heather Forbes has her two great books, the Volume 1 and Volume 2, and many resources on her website. And her classes can be taken online as well. I love the live version classes, and we offer them in our clinic because then they also become a support group. But, I always say to parents, you know, if you want to learn Spanish, you can pick up a book and read the book. Or you can read the book, and then you can take a live interactive course where you're always going to learn more. Because it's hard to just change your parenting style overnight. Read a book and change your parenting style. You need support in the journey to figure out, am I doing this right? Is anybody else struggling with this?
Well, and having to know that other families are struggling. And, you know, one of my sons, when I was taking a parenting course, and, you know, and being a professional, you teach it, but you're always taking new things and learning new things. And I was taking this class. And I want to say it was an updated Love and Logic. And I just wanted a refresher on some responses. I had made notes in the book, and I left the book on the table, and my son was like 13 at the time, and he came up, and he read the whole book. By the next morning, he kind of took it to his room and read it, and he came back out and said, "You are a horrible parent if you have to read a book on how to parent me." And then he knew all my little things I was going to say when he was like really dysregulated. Like, I love you too much to argue with you right now. And so I had to kind of step up the game and find some new ones. But it is amazing that in sharing, that was just such an enjoyable class to go through, any of these parenting classes. And I love Beyond Consequences, that, you know, parents can share, that you're not alone in experiencing some of these. And, you know, to be successful, you have to, number one, admit there's a challenge, understand where it comes from, and get all the resources and support that you can find.
Yeah, that's a key piece for parenting success, especially when you're parenting kids with trauma histories, because I hear from parents over and over again how alone they feel, right? I mean, the typical parent and family member doesn't understand. They need to be connected with professionals that understand what it's like to parent kids with trauma histories and other parents who are walking the journey.
That is so true.
It makes it so much easier. Yeah.
Well, and even getting together socially with other families, we had a beach outing and we had about maybe 50 people there with, you know, different families with kids, all different ages, from young to teen. And one of the things that it was so nice to see the kids group together, but for the parents to be able to share what was happening in their life in a safe way with other families, and, you know that they had a place, they had a group that would understand some of the, you know, things that they were experiencing were, you know, right on key, because the family next to you is going through the very same thing.
Yes.
And to share resources. I think that's really important. And we don't have any callers, but that's okay, because I'm going to kind of test the waters. We have a lot of listeners who will pull this up after also. We spike in listening to the archive. So I'll send you that link, Julie.
Okay.
And the other thing is, how can a family that is in Michigan, in your area, reach out to your practice?
Oh, yeah. I'm happy to pass along my my phone number and my email address through either one. And I am the founder of an organization in Metro Detroit that we call the Attachment Coalition of Michigan, and it is a group of private practitioners throughout Metro Detroit and Ann Arbor who all specialize in adoption, trauma, and attachment, and we do peer education and consultation with one another. We do education throughout the community. We're part of a national organization. And we're always referring amongst each other so that if my practice is full or you live too far from my clinic, I can try to connect you with one of my colleagues in the same specialty. My direct phone number is 248-345-2410. And emails are always welcome. And my email is kjkubiak44@yahoo.com. And you can check out our organization's website at www.attachmentcoalition.org.
That is wonderful. I just want to encourage anyone out there listening to please reach out if you live in that area. Hook up with Julie, support groups and, you know, services. She truly is an expert and truly is passionate about everything that she's doing. For those of you who have just tuned in or are getting ready to tune out, my name is Connie Going, and I am a consultant for Adoption Associates, also an adoptive mom and caseworker for many years. And I'm just honored to be here. I encourage families that are out there, again, to reach out. The website for Adoption Associates, which also has resources on it, is www.adoptionassociates.net. And I just hope everyone has a great holiday weekend. So, and Julie, I want to thank you for being with us. It was just a privilege and an honor.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it, Connie.
Thank you. Take care now.
Okay. Bye-bye.